This is The State of Things. I'm Anita Rao in for Frank Stacio. A giant 36-foot canvas mural has come home to North Carolina. It was created by children living in Chapel Hill, Greece, and Mexico. It's the brainchild of art educator Sarah Cornett, and it started with one main question. Can collaborative art heal trauma and division? It's a big question, but Sarah took the mural into classrooms and refugee camps and asked children to join her in a conversation about what's important in their community now. She just recently returned from Ciudad Juarez, and she joins me on The State of Things. Sarah, welcome.
Hi, thanks. I'm so glad to be here and talk about the project.
Describe this mural for us. We said 36 feet long, made of canvas, four panels. It's huge. People can go on our website to see some photos, but paint us a picture.
So the mural started out, I really thought it was only going to be 18 feet, which seemed big enough at the time. and I envisioned it as a bicultural mural. So my idea was that I would join together two groups of kids, a mix of children that I was teaching at Scroggs Elementary School, and those kids are a mix of refugee kids and public school kids. And then I was going to take it to Greece and work with a mix of children over there, because in Greece, of course, they're also dealing with a huge refugee crisis. And so my excitement was to join these two groups together and to see if I could create some sort of connection between these kids. And so it started out half as big as it is now because I ran into some unexpected questions along the way that I had to address later on. And so I just kept adding panels. Really beautiful. It's incredibly colorful, and I would love for people to go see it. If you're listening to the radio now, you can go look at all the pictures on the website for the mural, samedifferencethemural.com.
So it started with your kids at Scroggs Elementary in Chapel Hill. There was a significant refugee population there, and you were noticing that there was a little bit of distance between the refugee kids and some of the other kids in the school, and you wanted to kind of bridge that gap and create conversation. Tell us about what they painted in the mural.
So the process that I'm using is one where the kids decide upon every piece of what's going to happen in the mural, and they also generate the images themselves. And so I had carefully thought about this question, what's important in our community right here, right now? And I used the word important because I wanted to make sure that it was open-ended enough that they could draw about anything that was important, whether it was something really positive or something that they noticed that was going on that they also wanted to talk about. And so the kids in North Carolina, especially because they were elementary school kids, they thought very representationally about their community. And so they decided to draw sort of a classic mountains to coastline image. And one of the interesting metaphors that they put into the image was, as we were considering what was sort of the most important thing to highlight in the mural, they decided that people are the most important thing in North Carolina and sort of the foundation of community. And so they drew self-portraits, and we made those really big and kind of set into the mountain landscape. And that's just a really cool part of the mural, that their faces are in the mountains. And they're sort of facing the other side of the mural, which was blank at the time. And they sent a lot of visual and literal invitations to the other children that we hoped were going to complete the second half. They sent positive messages to them in the clouds and a friendly traveler's airline. There's an airplane heading that direction. Also some people in a boat that were drifting toward the middle of the mural. And all of those things were invitations to connect, and I was really excited to see that work happening.
So you took it to Greece originally with the intention of getting the perspective of refugee children. You didn't end up finding the exact community that you were hoping for on your first stop, so you ended up having to make a second stop. Can you tell us about your two stops in Greece and what the kids told you there and put on the mural?
Yeah. So I assumed, given the numbers of refugees that have been through Greece, that when I went to a public school, I would find a mix of refugee kids and public school kids like I was teaching at Scroggs. And I found a great group of kids, middle school kids in Thessaloniki, which is a university town, much like Chapel Hill. But what I noticed was none of the kids in the public school were refugees. And so I started asking questions. And what I discovered was there is not a lot of integration of refugees happening, especially in the public school system. There are a few programs, but mostly the refugees are in these camps and held in sort of housing situations where they can't really get education. And that was really interesting to me. And I realized that if I was going to do this properly and get the perspective of both sets of students, that I was just going to need to go to a refugee camp myself. And I picked Samos because at the time, and I think probably still, Samos is fairly notorious for the conditions there. And it's a small island, and so I could live and work very close to where the camp is located.
So you went to Samos Island, and you worked with children there. And this is a camp that was designed for 650-ish people, but thousands of people are there. Describe the environment and how you go about creating art in that kind of environment with a lot of chaos and people moving in and out.
Yeah, that's a really good question because it's really hard to get into the camp and work. It's really hard to be in the camp because it's pretty chaotic. So as you said, the camp was an old military barracks. It was designed for 648 kids, and there were about 5,000, not kids, families. There were about 5,000 people there when I was working in Samos. I was not allowed to work in the camp. Instead, I worked at an NGO that was really close by. The village of Vathi is right up against the camp, and it has about as many residents in the village as there are residents in the camp. And so children would walk down from the refugee camp, and they could come to this NGO. It was called Still I Rise, and they ran a sort of education center for as many kids as they could hold, which was about 150. And kids would come down, and they would get whatever classes they could for the teachers who were there that day. And so for a week, I worked with kids at this little center. In the camp, I walked up in the camp a few times because I wanted to know, you know, what the kids' lives were like on a daily basis. And it was pretty rough. There weren't really enough tents, and so people would cobble together structures however they could out of cardboard and plastic. The hill is really steep, and I don't know how many people have ever been camping on a hillside, but it's really hard to live on a steep hillside, and so they would do their best to create a space. But the camp spilled out into what they called the jungle, all the Mediterranean shrubbery, and just down and up hills. There was no real fencing. It was pretty open.
So what did the kids tell you there? What's important in their community now?
So the most important thing that those kids wanted to do was be seen. And actually, I encountered the exact same thing when I walked up into the camp and I started talking to the adults. They really were desperate to be seen and heard and not treated like a number, which is ironic because the number that they're given when they get off the boat is this incredibly important thing because it's the number in line that they are to have their asylum hearing. So as important as those numbers are and those little pieces of paper are, they all felt like they'd lost their sense of personhood, and they were being referred to as masses and waves and, you know, these faceless people. And so they just really wanted to be seen. And so what the kids wanted to have be seen was their camp. And so they did a very careful painting of Vathi, which is the tourist town, and it's really beautiful, little cute little tourist buildings along a waterfront. But behind and above the tourist town are thousands of tents, and they painted them black. And one kid told me it was to show the darkness of their lives in this camp above this beautiful little town. And one of the most important things about the camp, they actually literally made a map of the camp up behind the town. But the most important thing that they put on there was the food line, because the food line is the focus. I mean, I have a son, and food is really important in his life. But for these kids, the food line was the focus of a lot of activity. You know, you would wait in the line for hours, and if you were really lucky, when you got to the end, you would get some food. But unlucky people happened every day that didn't get any food at the end of the line. So the food line stretches all the way down that part of the canvas.
So your experience in Samos, that was supposed to be the last stop on the journey, but you brought the mural back to Chapel Hill, and there was something that the student said to you once you brought that back that inspired you to continue on the journey. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that was a really important and troubling time. I got home on the 15th of May, and I put up the mural, which at that point was 27 feet, so it was quite impressive already. And I brought every single kid that I teach at Scruggs, so 500 children from kindergarten to fifth grade, and we would sit in groups in front of it and talk about it. And I allowed their comments and questions to guide the discussion. But one thing that kept coming up over and over was how lucky they felt not to have these kinds of situations happening in our country, that it seemed really far away, the idea of people living in tents and not having enough food and waiting to get somewhere and waiting to get in and be granted asylum. All of that seemed really far away. And of course, as you guys probably all know, this has been a really big issue lately with the migrants at our border. And the more I kept hearing about that situation, and then hearing about the kids making this assumption that that wasn't happening here, I realized that my mural was not telling a complete story.
What did you hear when you decided to take the mural to Ciudad Juarez?
So I knew enough about this that I knew I needed a partnering organization, and so I started calling people and emailing people and hoping that somebody would pick up on the project and be willing to support it. And I found that support in an organization called Hope Border Institute. It's an advocacy group, and they work on both sides of the border. They're based in El Paso and Juarez. And they connected me with Casa del Migrante, which is a Catholic-run, faith-based shelter in Juarez, where after the Remain in Mexico policy became much more strictly enforced on June 7th, and we began returning asylum seekers, you know, to Mexico. If they're lucky, they find a place in one of these shelters where they can wait out their asylum hearing.
And you said you noticed that the kids in the refugee camp in Mexico had this really interesting notion of past, present, and future. Can you tell me about that and how that showed up on their contributions to the mural?
Yeah. So as we were talking about what's important right now at Casa del Migrante, one thing that kept coming up, these themes kept showing up, and it's my job to sort of notice the themes and check in with the kids and see if what I'm noticing is really a pattern. And so they started talking about home and what they remembered about home, and then they started talking about what they appreciated that they were being given right there at Casa del Migrante. And then one girl started talking about destino, which can mean future or it can mean destiny. And when I noticed that pattern, I picked it up, and we started thinking about what images they might want to put into a picture that was about a journey, about past, present, and future. And their images are so incredibly different from anything else that the other kids had made. It's really a remarkable addition to the mural.
So I know you write on your blog, you really tracked this experience and your reflections along the way and your conversations with children and participants. And you talk about some of the discomfort that you felt in various spaces and your experience negotiating your own white privilege. Could you share some of your reflections and where you stand with that now as the project is in a different phase?
I think it's funny. When I got home, I was talking to my husband about it, and he gave me a really great phrase. He talked about leaning into discomfort and just that being an okay place to be. And so I like to think that that's what I'm doing in every phase of this project, but especially when I'm working in an environment where I so acutely feel my white privilege. And so I think what happens for me is that I walk into these places and I definitely feel the I don't belong and, You know, I'm walking in with a backpack and a cell phone and things that other people don't have, and I definitely feel really privileged when that's happening. But my my impulse is to connect and start talking to people and start connecting and get out the paints and start getting out the materials and using the artwork to just bring people together and connect. And I don't speak the many languages that were spoken on Samos Island, and I'm also not a Spanish speaker, but it's amazing how the working with images and working with paint just brings people together in joy. And so I just sort of have to make a decision that even though I'm a person of privilege and I'm white, that I'm just going to go ahead and do something. You know,
like, yeah.
I just need to do something. I needed to do something to bring a project to these kids and uplift them. And it was uplifting for them. I was so excited to read their words about what they thought about it. And also just try and connect all these other kids and then all the people who are going to see this project to try and connect everyone with this idea that these are all people with dreams and a past and a present and a future, and they're really amazing and beautiful things to look at.
I have about 20 seconds left,
yeah.
But tell me what's next for Same Difference, the mural.
It needs a home because I don't have a wall that's big enough. I'm actually just even trying to get it photographed right now is going to be a challenge. But it also just needs a place to be seen because right now is when people need to understand that these are individuals and not masses, and they should look and see what Natalia from El Salvador made and talked about in this thing, and they should really kind of enjoy and feel that this is a very hopeful thing. This is a joyous project. And
we're going to have to leave it there, Sarah, but people can see photos at our website, stateofthings.org, a program produced by Laura Pelliser, Dana Terry, Amanda Magnus, and Grant Hall of Mormon. Robin Copley is the technical director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Anita Rao.